Welcome to part two of our conversation about a better understanding with James Copert. When you'd go to like play at another friend's house, did you ever feel like any of these things were still there? They would follow you specifically to your friend's house and then leave with you, almost like an attachment of some sort?
I do remember where that there was, I remember breaking down in tears, and I was a lot older then, so I was maybe 16, and I was going to work, and I just felt that this something was following me, and I just turned around. I'd had enough. I was really like at my wit's end, and just turned around, so just shouting, "Stop following me, go home." Mm-hmm. I couldn't see anything, but I felt really strongly there. But things occurred around me, and I'll keep going back. There is some kind of, there's a couple of psychiatrists in the States that have done a lot of research around ADHD people. Mm-hmm. and kind of seen some real strong links between ADHD people and things such as telekinesis, RSPK abilities, psychic abilities, mediumship, and all this. There's a lot more than there is kind of neurotypical kids.
Yeah.
And I don't know whether it's some, what one of my friends who's a quite a well-known medium, she said that because of my ADHD, if to a spirit, I'm kind of lit up almost like a torch. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's why you attract something. And I suppose these things are energy. They need energy, don't they? And if someone's got ADHD, I suppose that's a battery to them. So I actually got banned from some people's houses because stuff would happen. My friend Debbie, whenever I went round to her house, the TV would start turning on and off. The doors would kind of start opening and closing. Even to the point where I rang her up on the phone, things would happen and she'd hang up on me. So she just got sick of me going round and scaring the life out of her. Now, whether that's the RSPK of me projecting that with my own mind or it was a poltergeist, I don't know. And I remember another occasion, I was at my friend Tom's house and I said, "Oh, someone else is with us." I don't know why I said it. I just said it and his cupboard doors just flew open. So this was kind of a theme wherever everywhere I went, things did kind of happen around me and still do, not to that extent during my kind of pubescent years, but I'm 40 now and things do start happening still frequently, you know, mm-hmm. almost on a daily occurrence. But yeah, I did sometimes, it wasn't all the time, but I definitely felt like some of these things did follow me around, definitely.
When you actually left the house, when childhood is over and it's not just, you know, you're going over to stay at a friend's house, but you're moving out, you're doing your own thing now. Was it a relief? How did it feel when you actually left that house?
It did, even though I moved somewhere else negative. I ended up homeless, but it was just, I do want to go back to that house. I do a paranormal research group now, and I do want to go back to get some answers. But to leave that house, I was relieved. And really, that one thing, it's one of the most terrifying experiences I've ever had was, I, as I say, I've seen stuff all my life, so I don't really get scared, but this did scare me. And I don't use the term demon. I think it's wrapped up in religion and things, and I don't quite know what things are. But I was outside one day, and this thing was, it was dark, and I heard someone sprinting up to me, and I quickly turned around thinking, "Oh, who is this?" And this figure, it was jet black, and it just ran straight past me as close as it possibly could without actually touching me, and around the corner. Mm-hmm. And it dripped with this just hate, just sadness and hate. And I think that was what was there. And again, that was just a intimidation. It was as close as possible without actually touching me. Complete. And I don't, people talk about shadow people, and my experience as a shadow people are, I think there's lots of different kinds. I don't think they're one thing. I think some are just spirits that, you know, have a different color. I don't see them all as negative. And I don't think this was a shadow person. This was something different. It was just something very nasty and dark, mm-hmm. and ancient. It definitely felt like that.
Why do you think it had such a negative intent with your family? I mean, could it have been any family? It could have been anybody that lived there, and it just happened to be that you guys were the victims because you were in the wrong place at the wrong time?
Or, I think so. You know, I think it was, if you look, if the previous owner committed suicide and the previous owner before that committed suicide,
yeah.
and strange illnesses as well. So the previous owner's family as well, but his son ended up getting a condition where he was in chronic pain constantly, ended up not being able to walk. And he ended up dying really young as well. Just lots of kind of negative things kind of went on from there. So I do think it was related to that house. Luckily now, it's no one lives there. It's a holiday home, so people are in there for a short space of time, which I'm really pleased about, because I do think it is there, that something really dark residing there.
So now, now even more people can have their lives ruined on vacation.
Yeah. I think it's you know, with them being short term, I don't think it will affect them. And there was other times as well, and I don't think there was lots of different spirits in the home. I think this was this same entity changing shape. So not long after we first moved in, and they talk about when someone's completely scared to the, you know, I've forgotten the words, but he was so scared that an old man appeared in his room, and he wasn't asleep. It was kind of early evening. He's awake, and he was paralyzed with fear, my brother. He was absolutely petrified, that was the word, petrified, like he couldn't speak for maybe 3 hours. One of my friends came round, who saw a little girl crouched down in the corner, crouched down kind of close to the floor with her feet, not on her knees, but with her feet on the floor, just staring up at him, again in quite a intimidating way. And you know, there was some residual ghost. There was, in that village alone, is the Grey Lady, and we saw her walking across the yard, and it was that traditional kind of residual spirit of a cloud of smoke forming into a kind of a body strolling across the yard and then vanishing like smoke. And my friend who's with me was one of the people that always used to take the mickey out of us for believing in ghosts, and he never did after that. He never even, when he used to pick me up, he used to go to the other end of the street and wait there after seeing that. So there was kind of, you know, just I think with the history of the place, but I think those other sightings was this one entity changing its shape and becoming something different, just purposely to scare people.
What do you think it is that's in that house, and why do you think it's there? I mean, I know that this is all conjecture, it's just your opinion, but as being someone who is obviously very close to that house, more than any of us, when you look back on this, is there anything that you make sense of as to why it's there? Was there any research that you've done that points to anything? Where are you at with that?
It's there's a lot of myths and legends with that village. So there was, within the village, the village is kind of in a circle around what was another village, which is completely submerged and kind of been left. It's just a field now, but you could still see the shapes of where buildings were. Mm-hmm. And there was a legend when we first moved there that there was this stake in the middle of this field, and if you broke the field, then demonic entities had come out and kill you and stuff like this. So these were the kind of things that the kids used to speak about. They also spoke about, there used to be a wooden castle on this hill by the school, and there was a legend that someone climbed up their window. She'd been to a ball and wasn't allowed out, the lady that lived there, and her husband saw her and thought it was someone breaking in and had killed her, and she then died and pulled the mask off and saw it as his wife. And it was those kind of legends constantly going around. It's just a really ancient place. What specifically in that place was, I don't know. All I can do is kind of hypothesize. I felt like it hated the fact of our life, that we were alive, and hated our humanity. That's what I felt like. Looking kind of back on it, it did feel like that was its reason. That's why it was causing the negativity, was its detesting of us as humans. Now, whether this is an ancient entity from, you know, pre-times, or I don't know where it's come from, or whether it's a manifestation of just maybe negativity in the house of previous families, and maybe the suicides were just a coincidence and that's created something negative, I don't know. I really don't know. I just know that it didn't like us. It didn't like the fact that we were human, and that was kind of the feeling I got off it.
Have you ever returned to the house?
I took my son on New Year's Eve. We were talking about it, and I just said to him, we were passing it, the village, and I said, would you like to see it? And he said, yeah. And we drove down, and I was parked outside telling him kind of some of the stories, and I start setting off, and both of us at exactly the same time went, "What was that?" And literally this woman in a green dress had appeared right in front of the car as I set off and kind of went through the bonnet and just vanished. Both of us saw, because I even said to Charlie, my son, what did you see? And so I asked him to describe it to me first to see if we saw the same thing, which we had. And again, that was very much a, I'm going to freak you out. I'm going to do something to scare you. Another time I went, it was when I was trying to get in the house to do an investigation and speak to the current owners. And I just looked in the window and I just said, yeah, it is me. I am back. And heard a massive crash from within the house. I couldn't see anything move, but there was just a big crash in the house. So it doesn't like me, whatever it is.
Have you had any luck getting in touch about renting the place as a vacation home to go and investigate or just go back through those doors?
We have kind of thought about that, but we wanted to be kind of respectful of the owners, and I've kind of written them a couple of letters, left my number, and they've not got back to me. Yeah. Maybe they don't want that kind of negative reputation on the place. I don't know. I did kind of say that there would be a lot of market out there for people that would like to visit a haunted place, but so far they've not done it. That could be a potential for the future.
Do you have any reservations? Let's say that you do get an acceptance, and maybe it's just a personal one. Maybe saying, yes, you can come here and investigate, but you can't publish whatever you find, or not name the address or name the house. Which is obviously fairly common. How do you process that? Do you have any reservations, or are you excited about the idea? What goes through your mind? Because I'm sure you've thought of that. If you get that letter or you get that response and they say, yeah, here's the green light, go ahead. In your mind right now, if you got that letter in the mail today, what would your reaction be?
I'll be honest, I'd be scared. I would be scared to go back in that house. It is something dark, and whether people believe that or not, it genuinely is. Everyone, people, visitors, and everything saw things happen and move, hover in midair, be thrown across the room. You know, this was a normal occurrence in that house, and I would be scared, and I would be scared that it could latch onto me again. But part of me wants answers, and part of me also, you know, my work and everything is about helping people. And I do get scared that someone else could eventually live in that house and have these negative things happen to them and potentially someone else take their own life, which is horrific, absolutely horrific.
The fact that you're obviously not living there anymore. But, you know, obviously there's a lot of questions there. It's not an easy thing to answer from afar. There's no judgment that I think anyone can give you for whatever answer you give on that, because they're not you. They haven't lived through that. You know, good or bad, we are going to have some forms of emotional attachments to places that we have spent portions of our lives in. And so there's naturally going to be that curiosity there of, you know, what is the place like now? Is that thing still there? But now you obviously, you know, you have a family, you have kids. Has that run through your mind at all? Because obviously this thing has already attacked your family, your mom, your dad, your brothers, and there has been such grief that's been brought on, that portion of your family unit, your birth family unit, if you will. Are you concerned? Are there reservations there that this thing could then now look at you as an adult and now you're the dad, and it kind of infiltrate or infest your family unit as it is as an adult, as a parent?
I don't think it could. I think it's very much attached to that house, and we're too far removed now. But if I was homeless with my family and that house was the only option, I wouldn't take my family in there.
No,
that's for sure. And you know, things do still occur around me, and I think I'd be aware and be more now, kind of have the tools to kind of fight that and bring the people in to fight that as well.
Do you feel that you are, I mean, the term that we hear quite often, empathic is one of them. Of course, psychic is the old school way of saying some of those things. But Do you feel that you yourself are somewhere in one of those zones of being empathic, being able to sense the other side more so than the average person?
I think so, and I don't know why. I'm no one special or anything, but it's just always occurred. It's always just been a normal sure. part of me. Not just even with that. Even, you know, if I was on a train and, you know, there were three people on the train and someone with kind of quite serious mental health issues walked in that carriage, they'll sit next to me. I don't know what it is about me.
Sure.
I'm the person that the crazy guy had come and speak to on the street if there's 1,000 people. It's just always been like that. I don't know what it is. I don't know. I haven't got any answers to that. Like I said, I don't know if it's this link with ADHD or, mm-hmm. Or even just the fact, you know, I kind of pride myself being in quite a nice person, and I always help people, and that's what I've always done. And whether, you know, that's part of it as well, whether people, I think the on the other side are more inclined to, you know, I think you'll probably be able to know better than me that the people in this kind of area field, most of the time, the genuine people who do have the genuine abilities tend to be nicer people, I find, you know, sure. kind of real genuine people. And I don't know whether that's part of the attraction to those people.
I don't know. I mean, there's something there, you know, the fact that we all have this extreme interest in something, you know, I think lends itself then anytime anyone has a extreme interest in something, I think we have to look and go, what else is going on with that individual? What other kind of interests yeah. do they have? And quite often it is something. I mean, me and my wife, Asperger's, you know, I know it's, yeah. it's called, you know, I don't think that's technically the term anymore, but we joke about it because we like the name. If somebody yeah. else wants to change it and make it negative, I like it. We've jokingly named our farm that we live on Aspie Acres because it's two non-neurotypical people with their non-neurotypical daughter deciding out of nowhere that we're going to be farmers and do ghost podcasts. The ghost podcast has been going on forever, but now we decided we're going to add farming to the mix, which Fantastic. Neither of us have ever done. But we feel so at peace with this and the idea, and we just love it. You know, I think it's something not necessarily, I'm not seeing auras around people and going, oh, they're a good one to talk to. But you can tell, you know, after talking to someone after a minute or two, and not in a negative way by any means, that, you know, that you're talking to someone who's non-neurotypical. It's just, I think we all who are kind of on that spectrum communicate in a certain way.
Yeah,
we just know it. And it's not like, oh, there's an oddity there or an oddity there. There's a connection that I think we almost subconsciously make with each other, and just kind of lets each other know we're safe to talk to each other, because I think a lot of us are very defensive and our guard is up of talking to almost anyone. And every once in a while, the green light goes off going, this one's safe. this one understands me. And we kind of speak the same language, you know, in layman's terms of what you would describe it as. So I think that there is a connection there between folks who are somewhere on the spectrum and having the ability to sense things, but also just even if I always kind of describe it as like a 1 to 10 in terms of abilities to sense things. One is like, I can feel if there's something maybe in the room, but I couldn't tell you who it is, what it is, or anything about it, but I feel there's something kind of off here. 10 is I can see the damn thing in the room and we're both in there. I can only feel it, but you can say who it is and what they look like, or someone who's at a 10 could do that. And there's something I think to that in terms of our abilities. And I think it has something to do with sensitivity or a sense that is not necessarily recognized as one of our normal senses. Just as some people have a super hearing or super eyesight, I think there's something there where some of us are just born with better senses to whatever this is we're talking about. You know?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And
I think it's something, you know, potentially as well about the neurodiverse brain, yeah. where if you look at most children kind of do have this ability, and they kind of, when the brain's going from the childhood into the kind of adolescent stage, they lose it. And whether kind of more neurodiverse yeah. people don't lose that part of the development, I don't know. Maybe that's one kind of hypothesis that I've had with it all.
Yeah, it just keeps running throughout life and really doesn't change. It's interesting because when you look at that too, in terms of non-paranormal, I think that that still runs in neurodiverse individuals too. My example being myself, I have I've had some very specific interests throughout my entire life, from very young childhood. Yeah. I literally have cassette tapes of me playing. I called it Ghostbuster Radio at the time. I was two. I was pretending I was doing a ghost show in 1984 into a cassette tape. And, you know, basically doing a version of this show 30 some years ago. And I was two. Now, now here we are all these years later, and it's my career. It is what I do. But obviously it was a passion back then.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it's crazy. But there's other things too, where when you have those passions and drives, you just kind of go nuts with it. Food was another interest of mine. I played when I was a kid. I would pretend I was doing a cooking show on camera. So what did I end up doing in my early 20s before I launched the ghost show? I got into food blogging and ended up with a show on Travel Channel. It's one of those things where you just, you know, folks who are neurodiverse, I think very early on we recognize what our passions are and we don't really, we take them to extremes and they don't really change. It's like by the age of five, we can tell you everything we want to do and then we're going to go do it. And I think with a lot of us, we have those sort of passions or even if we're not something we're going to go do, it's just an interest. Like Titanic was one of them for me. Turned out to be with my wife too, which was really kind of funny because we discovered that on our second date and she thought I was making fun of her because she's like, how did you know that about me? I'm like, what do you mean? Like, here's my autographed Robert Ballard book. You know, that I got when I was like eight, you know, and on one of our early dates, we went and saw Dr. Ballard do his speech because he happened to be in our city and we were both just the thrilled dorks in the back. But it's interesting just how those interests and those passions run with folks who are neurodiverse. And then if they have those abilities, those added abilities on top, how that will just continue on throughout life. As will those passions that are developed at such an early age. It's just trying to then adapt those sort of things into adulthood and to make them work in the grown up world, which is interesting because we're at a point in time now where we can do things that otherwise didn't exist as a career path when we were four or five. So I find it very fascinating. You're connecting the two together because I too believe there's a very vast connection there that I don't think has been explored anywhere near as deep as it will be or should be.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, my child, Charlie, he's ADD and autism, and he's got, you know, in his sleep, things fly about his room, and I think it's him rather than anything else.
Yeah.
And then just as a real strange coincidence, I got with my partner, and then her daughter's been, Lily's been diagnosed with autism as well. So we've got this kind of strange attraction that kind of just kind of links things together as well.
That wraps up our conversation with James Copert about a better understanding. A big thank you to him for joining us on the program today and sharing his life experiences with us. Until next time, for The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening. Thank you.